Have you ever made a track with just a door? What was your previous job before founding Kane Audio? Congrats on 5302 Recordings. It sounds like you'll be putting out just the music I am into. What are the most overused samples in EDM history? Hey guys, welcome to the Kane Audio vlog. It's Friday. It's time for another Ask Me Anything. Usual rules apply. Comment below this video and I'll get back to you in next week's video. Before I look at last week's video, is there any house admin? Oh yes, the 5302 Electronica playlist on Spotify has been updated yesterday, this week at some point, so I'll drop a link below as usual, so feel free to check that out. It doesn't matter if you've got a free Spotify account or a premium Spotify account, whatever, there's no cost to listening to a playlist. Please give it a follow, give it a share, get involved. What else? I am starting to make steps towards the garden studio. I've made all my decisions. I mean, I've made a lot of the decisions a long time ago, obviously. And I have slowly, over the last however long it's been prepping bits and pieces, and I'm at some of the last stages, so hopefully that will be actually going ahead at some point. Realistically, video wise I should start getting videos out end of this month. Yeah, we're looking at maybe 3-4 weeks. So for those of you that are long time viewers, you'll know that I am currently in the back room of the house, which was a temporary solution, but it's been, what has it been? Has it been 2 years now? It was supposed to be kind of 6 months, but one thing led to another, and I decided I was going to build a studio of sorts in the back garden, and yeah, and that's been a lot of decision making in do I go for a prefab thing, or do I build it myself, or do I get a custom designed thing? And you know, first and foremost, let's be honest, the biggest thing is the cost of the whole thing, and that's a huge factor when it comes to which option I was going to go for. So I'm going to do separate videos. I think I'm going to do a garden studio series. I know that YouTube is full of like garden office series, so I'm going to try and sort of cover everything from decisions I made right at the beginning and why I made those decisions, and thinking about music, because I'm not a drummer. I'm not going to have a drum kit in there. I don't need it to be the world's most soundproof bunker. I also have very limited space. It's not a huge garden. And I definitely don't have unlimited budget. So I'm hoping that there should be some call for this series, because it's essentially going to be electronic music producer studio in a garden on a budget. So I don't know, maybe there's some appeal for that. But more importantly, I kind of figured like some of the things I've had to think about and decide so far, and bearing in mind I haven't even taken delivery of the actual main structure yet, and I haven't even got to sorting the foundations yet, but I've already come across some things where I'm like, oh, I didn't think of that. And I've not seen that in other people's YouTube videos when they're building a garden office or studio or whatever. So hopefully I'll be able to go into some more detail, and hopefully I'll be able to provide people with... I'm going to try and give actual links to actual things that I bought. And therefore, if people want to, if they like the idea or whatever, then they can copy me or whatever. It's up to you. But yeah, so that's that. So yeah, I think that's probably it for House Admin. Spotify playlist, Garden Studio will be happening. It's going ahead, but it's not going to be imminent. What else? And of course the Hackintosh. So I did check the current funds in the Patreon account. We're not quite there, but at the turn of the month we should be. And I think I've got to a stage where whatever's missing, I'll just pay for myself anyway. But I'm also thinking maybe the Hackintosh series of videos would be a good start in the new studio. So two birds, one stone. There we go. Job done. Yeah, I think that's it for House Admin. Otherwise, I'm just waffling to make a change. Right, let's have a look at last week's video and see what we've got. I have no idea how many questions we've got this week. Okay, it's not looking too bad. Right, starting at the top. Silent Warrior. Hello, Dom. I'm just annoyed about restoring an older track. And you can imagine, plugin missing and all the error messages. That brings me straight to the question for you. Have you ever made a track with just a door, no third-party plugins, maybe even released? Best regards, Carlo. Well, I have made tracks just using a door. I have not released one, and I'm not sure if I could. Maybe I probably could with Bitwig, I think. I think there's probably enough stuff in Bitwig that pleases me that I could probably write a track. Maybe we should do that as a challenge at some point. Maybe... yeah, that could be good, actually. I like the idea of doing that, because I know I did try many, many, many years ago. I think it was in one of the early versions of Ableton, and I wasn't happy with things like the kicks, the kicks that came with Ableton and the kick machines and everything. It just, they weren't doing it for me. Whereas I think nowadays we've come a long way. So maybe that's a challenge. But no, I've definitely not released one, and for the reason I just said, you know, the basic things like the kicks, I remember, I just couldn't get them to sit right where I was comfortable without using a sample. So I never got to the point where I could actually be proud of a track and release it just using the door sounds. However, one thing I will say is that for those of you who have watched my tutorials in the past, you'll already know this, but for those of you that haven't, I rarely, rarely deviate from the built-in plugins when it comes to effects. So when we're looking at reverb, delay, chorus, distortion, compressors, when it comes to writing and producing a track, the mixdown is different. I'll treat that as a separate job when it comes to mixdown and mastering. But the writing and producing, I pretty much never use third-party plugins for effects. It's maybe on the odd occasion, if I'm dealing with a vocal, I might use one of the UAD plugins or something like that. But very, very rare that I go outside of Bitwig to use things like compressors, reverb, delays, because I kind of figure with electronic music, it's not really that important. I know that there are some reverbs that sound better than others. I know that there are some delays that sound better than others, blah, blah, blah. But when you're sticking a delay on a little bleepy synth that is drowned in kicks and bass and hats and everything else, then nobody's going to pick out that little reverb and go, ooh, nice reverb. So yeah, there we go. Moving on. FanFan87, salut Dom, upload, high five. Sorry for not being present these last 2 weeks. Life has made a little step to me. I'm getting mix and mastering job to do for labels and artists, and the main public musical organisation of my little hometown is very interested in my skills and proposed to me to conduct workshops about sound design, making tracks, arrangements in their brand new studio. Hey, well, huge high fives. Very excited about this. Yeah, me too. My question, what was your previous job before founding Kane Audio? How did you switch from this job to full-time producer, engineer, preset maker, sound designer, etc.? How and when did you decide it? How did you make enough relationships to live with from music, human connections, or mostly internet? Okay, so there's a few things to break down there. First of all, congratulations, that's huge for you to be getting all that work coming in. Brilliant. So before I went full time, so I've always said that my story is maybe a bit different to a lot of other, maybe it's exactly the same to others, but it doesn't help people who aren't on the same path. But I think essentially my story is I was always into DJing, producing since birth. I was into music in a huge way, and started producing on, you know, vintage computers when I was about 14. And it was just a hobby, a passion, something I wanted to make a career out of, but didn't really know how until it must have been 18, 19, 20 when I started taking it more seriously and trying to sort of submit demos. And I was DJing, I was putting on my own events, whether they be in small pubs or bars to clubs, you name it. I was just whatever I could get. At the same time, this may shock you, but I'm a bit of a nerd and was quite into the internet when the internet became a new thing. So I got involved in some internet radio shows because why wouldn't you when you're a DJ doing dance music and you're a nerd on the internet? And one of those radio stations was Proton Radio, which at the time was probably the first radio station, the first online radio station that did electronic music. Namely progressive house and ambient stuff. So they had a lot of listeners, and I think that meant that there were people around the world that could hear my DJ sets, because there wasn't much available. If you were into dance music, you listened to Proton Radio if you had the internet. That's kind of how it was. So I think, you know, I've always sort of said that a lot of my career taking off is down to luck, because I just happened to be doing the right things. But that sort of interim period of when I left school at 18 and I worked in call centers mostly, and I loved it, and I got into call center management and operations management, so I dealt with a lot of the business side of stuff, and I loved that as well. So, yeah, I always kind of had a thing for business, but, I don't know, I just did whatever I could. So as for making the switch from full-time day job to full-time music, it was down to a bit of luck, really, if I'm honest. Something I've always said is that, you know, I think if you want to make it into full-time something, obviously the talent or skill set or education or whatever needs to be there in the first place. That's a given. But also, a lot of the time, it kind of relies on a bit of luck. Especially back when I started producing and DJing, there were no online tutorials. If you wanted to start DJing, there was no way of doing it other than doing it. There was no such thing as YouTube. You couldn't just jump on YouTube and find out how to use some decks. And also most people couldn't afford Technics SL1210s or whatever that were around at the time. So, you know, you kind of had to work your way up on some terrible belt drive decks. For me personally, it was Soundlab RT12Ds. If you want to Google those, they were terrible. They didn't even have a bottom. They were screwed in to a plank of wood with a crossfader in the plank of wood, with a Disco 2000 sticker on. And that was 1994-ish, something like that. Anyway, so my transition, basically, because I was working in call centres and doing operations management, and the company had an offer to be bought out, and part of that buyout was making me redundant, so I had a little wedge of cash, but I figured at the same time I was doing my online radio shows and they were sort of gaining popularity, I had had a few gigs abroad. I'd gone to, you know, obviously Ibiza, Mallorca, Russia, there were a few that sort of that year, and it was coming towards the summer, and I'd had an offer from a promoter in Eastern Europe to do a tour of Eastern Europe that summer, and that was going to take sort of 4 or 5 months. But before that got finalized, I'd had the offer of redundancy, and I sort of figured, well, I can live off that money for maybe 2 months before I have to look for another job. Let's see what I can do. If I really squeeze it, I can last maybe 3 or 4 months paying rent and eating baked beans on toast. So I just thought, what the hell? I'll see how long I can last on this tiny amount of money. So I did that. And then I got the tour of Eastern Europe. And that obviously, I mean, again, that wasn't huge money, but it was another wedge of cash that made me go, I think I could live for maybe 3, 4, maybe even 5 months off this when I come back. So, I sort of lasted a couple of months and then went on tour. And I think that was like 5 months, and then came back and thought I could probably last 4 or 5 months. So I was coming up to a year. And during that time, obviously, other work had come in and everything. So it just allowed me to sort of just transition, and and never got a day job since, really. So so I think I'm quite lucky in that I had that opportunity. There was that window of opportunity. But had I not had that window of opportunity, would it have been any different? Hard to say. I think it would have probably been the same outcome, just maybe slightly, it would have taken slightly longer to get there. It's always hard to tell, but I feel like it would have happened anyway, but I felt like that was just a good timing window of opportunity to be able to just throw everything I had at it, because I think had I not had the offer of redundancy, I wouldn't have been able to go on tour for 5 months living abroad and keep my day job. That couldn't have happened. So I would have had to have given up my day job anyway. So I think it would have probably happened anyway. But it was just kind of lucky timing as well. So that's how I made the switch. And then as bad luck would have it, I lasted probably 2 years where DJing was the most part of my career. In that time then, a year after that tour, I then managed to get my residencies at, my management managed to get my residencies at Space in Ibiza and Ministry of Sound in London. So then obviously I was getting more and more gigs worldwide, because at the time London and Ibiza was the centre of the universe for music. So and then a year or two after that, the big financial crash happened, so I lost most of my gigs, and that's when I kind of started going, well, I'm quite good at these sound design things, and a company approached me saying, we really like your sound. Can you make us some samples? And so I did that, and that kind of led me into the sound design thing, and the rest is history, I guess. How and when did you decide it? I think I've probably said that. So this was first happened 2005. I think 2004 was when I started getting my first international gigs, because I'd been putting on events in Bristol from around 2000 to 2002, only terrible events, but I loved them. Maybe 2003. Yeah, and then 2004, I was in Bournemouth, and I remember getting my first international gig in Mallorca, thinking, this is it, I've made it. €70. They're paying me to go to Mallorca for the night. So I did that and put on some more events. I think that was 2004, and then that sort of grew into 2005, and that's when I started going more regularly, like once a month I would be somewhere, and then 2005 or 6 was the tour, something like that. How did you make enough relationships to live with from music? So I guess part of it was the fact that I was young at the time and going out clubbing and mixing with people, and I moved around a lot from city to city because I enjoyed city life, and I'd move city. I'd be Bristol for a year, and then I lived in Bournemouth for a year or so, 2 years I think, and then London, and I just liked, I never had any attachments to anywhere, so I was always able to just go clubbing and mix with people. And obviously when you have a gig, you talk to the promoters, and then you talk to other DJs, and I don't know how anyone does that, but that's kind of how it all started. And I think being one of the first DJs online doing progressive house was a big head start for me, because, and this is why I said at the beginning of this long story, this is one of the reasons I said that it's not really a repeatable thing. It's not, I can't offer it as advice or a path for someone to take, because everybody has the internet in their pocket now. Back then, people didn't even have a website. It wasn't, you know, record labels didn't even have websites. I remember I would find out that such and such record label now has a website, which means they've probably got a contact page, which means they have an email address, which means I can email them. And I would be one of the first people in the world to email this record label. That's not something anyone can do now, because now contacting a record label by their contact page is, you know, it's almost like you're just spamming. You know, it's because it's you and millions of other people doing the same thing. So human connections or mostly internet, I'd say 50-50, because I'm incredibly thankful for the internet. But nowadays, I would say human connections are far more valuable. I've always used the phrase, a handshake is worth 1,000 emails. You know, it doesn't matter how good you are at writing. I don't think anything can beat meeting someone face to face, sit down with them, have a coffee, have a chat, get to know them before you start selling them your product, whatever that is. I think that's hugely important. And I'll give that to you as advice for someone in that transitioning phase of starting to take on more work. Meet as many people as you can while you can, because it's much easier to remember a face than it is to remember an email. There we go. Cheers. Have a great weekend. You too. John Bloomfield. Hi, Dom. Upload. High five. Congrats on 5302 recordings. It sounds like you'll be putting out just the music I am into. I'm in between studios at the moment, but will hopefully be getting it all set up soon, and look forward to producing some tunes and seeing what you think. Good, me too. I'm also in between studios at the moment, although it's been years, so it doesn't kind of feel like it. And also, it sounds like I'll be putting out music that I'm into as well, so it sounds like we've got something in common there. Ricky John, upload, high five. Always love the lengthy chat on creativity / remembering it should first and foremost be about enjoyment to bring me back round. Thanks as always and stay safe. Yeah, I did have a bit of a rant yesterday, but it's crucial. And I think so many of us forget why we get into these things. You know, talking about that transition of going from full-time day job to full-time musician, producer, whatever it is you do. When you first move across, you know, money is the key aspect. In fact, recalling that story, now you mention it, I can safely say that money was the driving factor for that, because it was all about, well, I can live for 2 or 3 months on this. Let's see what happens. Let's see how long I can last. You know, that was 15, 16 years ago. So I managed to make the 3 or 4 months last. But initially it is all about the money. And until that money becomes stable, it's difficult to think about anything but money. And even now, sometimes, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a family with wife and kids and house and bills to pay and food to eat. You know, so there are always going to be times where you sort of think, right, well, I'll do this job, even though it's not my favorite thing to do, but it's good money, so I'll do it, you know. And I'm very lucky that I've managed to be able to carve a career out of doing mostly things that I really enjoy. I'm also very lucky that I enjoy a lot of things, so that makes life easier for me. But yeah, sometimes you do find yourself doing 2, 3, 4, 5 jobs in a row where you're thinking, this isn't what I signed up for. This isn't what I wanted. Why am I doing this for not enough money? And this doesn't make any sense. And I always try and make an effort to take on projects that I think I'll enjoy. And there are projects that I will do that are free or not for profit or high risk or whatever. So long as I enjoy it, then it becomes worth it. I mean, I'll give you a prime example. I'm in the process of setting up a concept record label. You know, record labels inherently don't make money. You know, there are very few record labels that I've released with that have actually made me any money, that made me go, oh, that's real. You know, and obviously I'm going to try and be one of those labels, but there's no guarantee of any kind, which means that you have to make sure that it's something you love. If it doesn't make money, it has to be something that you go, I don't even care if it makes money or not. This is amazing. I love this thing, you know, whatever that thing is. And I think you've got to be very aware of that every time. Every now and then you've got to remind yourself of why you started all of this in the first place. And I think for the most part of anyone watching this video, especially if you've made it half an hour into this video, you know, there's a good chance that you're doing it because you love music, because you have this deep burning passion for whatever genre of music it is you're into. And I could not care less what genre or what thing that is, but that's your thing. That's your thing that you got into, whether it be as a kid, as an adult, whatever. That's your passion, and that's why you're watching this video, and that's why you've sat through nearly half an hour of this old man ranting. So there we go. Speaking of nearly half an hour, my camera resets at half an hour, so I'm going to beat it. I'll see you in a second. And I'm back. Right, moving on. I think we're almost done, to be honest, because I think the next ones are just high fivers. Where were we? Right, Not Your Human. Have a good weekend, Dom, and upload. High five. I have a question. What are the most overused samples in EDM history? Well, I mean, the most used, I wouldn't say overused, I'd say the most used is probably the Amen Break, or the other one, I forget the name of. There was some soul track. The Fatboy Slim drum kit, basically. but I wouldn't call either of those overused. I love them myself. And also, I wouldn't say they're ever used in EDM either, but I'm using the term EDM there as electronic dance music, therefore any dance music, not the genre EDM. As for the genre EDM, I couldn't tell you because I don't listen to it. So I'm assuming you mean electronic dance music. Yeah, I don't know. There've been a lot of samples where you hear the same thing over and over again. I mean, let's be honest, if you jump onto Beatport and listen to the top 100 techno or top 100 tech house or top 100 deep house, they probably, I'd say 80% of those all use the same samples within each genre. So whatever those are, they're probably the most overused samples. Unique Sounds of America, upload, high five, cheers Dom. Mitch Brown, great vlog as usual Dom, upload, high five. And that, my friends, is it. So I've kept it, well, short for me, I guess, this time. As per usual, keep your questions coming, especially during this quarantine, because I feel like there are less people watching these videos, but I feel like the people that are watching these videos during quarantine probably need much, much more content and longer content. So for anybody watching these videos, please do comment anything you want below this video, and I'll get back to you in next week's video. It can be anything from career advice to sound design to music production to vocals to record labels to you name it. You ask it and I'll do my best to answer it. So to prove that you've made it this far into the video, I'm gonna say comment the word stupid, because I can see Peter McKinnon has posted a video that said, I did something stupid. So comment the word stupid and I'll give you a high five in next week's video. I'll see you next week. Cheers.